This is Concepts, where two pretentious sirs quibble over ideas that explain today's world. Phil Shea and Steve Rose. My name is Phil Shea. I am writing for MakeASkillEject.com, and you can find more writing by me at HittingEject.com.
My name is Steve Rose, and you can find more about me at SteveRosePhD.com, where I write about mental health and addiction.
Welcome to Pros and Concepts.
Welcome.
Today, we're not going to be faffing about because I have no idea how much time we have, and there's a lot of stuff I want to cover.
Under an hour.
All right. Steve, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about friendship, the concept of friendship, the profound and deep concept.
More specifically, the concept of friendship as an adult, making new friends as an adult.
Ah, right. That's a real problem for a lot of people. And, there's a lot of loneliness, particularly among men these days.
So the headlines keep saying, yeah.
I do see that headline a lot.
Yeah, I mean, but in your actual profession, do you see it as I guess you're going to have selection bias because the people reaching out to you are going to have more issues in that regard. But is loneliness a major thing that they're dealing with?
Yeah, particularly older men, like middle-aged to older, boomer time frame, I guess you can say it's particularly prominent among those who kind of lost touch maybe during the pandemic, started drinking more, stopped going out and then not getting back in touch and not doing the normal things they were doing before.
But it got radicalized politically.
Selection bias, because I am talking to people that got into an addiction. And yeah, it is a thing I see. And I have also heard it before where people say, it's like, how do you make friends as an adult? It's so difficult. You ever hear that?
Oh, I hear it all the time. And I just don't believe it, honestly. So I'm just going to signpost this overall. We're going to have four main sections. First, I'm going to start with a preface, but then first, why we feel a need to even address this, or at least I do, because I had to cajole Steve to do this episode.
Ugh.
The second one is how to meet people. Third is following up and reaffirming, follow through. And then the final one is reevaluating. So I'm going to go through all these sections. But as a preface, I'm going to say first that if you're naturally good with people and social situations and you've never really experienced too much social anxiety, then this may seem fairly bizarre. You may react like, why are you thinking so much? Or this is all obvious, because I've had this reaction from people who, lucky for them, have had very balanced, emotionally supported upbringings. And when I tell them these things, they're just like, why are you thinking about that? But it's like, you have to improve somehow. And by improving and figuring things out, you end up finding ways you can actually point out to people, oh, this is, I had a sticking point here where like I couldn't talk to people in this way. And then I learned that this was an easy way to break the ice, for example. So that's just a preface there. So we were basically kind of diving into the first category. Why do we need this?
Why do we need to talk about friendship? This lowbrow concept.
Ugh. Lowbrow? Everyone needs friends. It's ridiculous. It's only for the pores. Although, I mean, I guess that is something we have come across.
This class aspect, yeah, it's a real thing. Is lonely at the top, apparently, they say.
Yeah, Thomas Joyner. But that's a different thing altogether. That's about the parts you have to kill in yourself to be successful in this system.
Yeah.
But I'm going to focus more on the more granular stuff for the average person.
Yeah.
And in this context, I'm going to say that I think that most of us haven't really learned how to make friends to begin with. I don't think it's harder necessarily as an adult. I kind of take the same stance with languages, which is controversial, but I think we only think it's easy for children because the situation kind of forced us to do it. And once we actually have agency and autonomy as an adult, we often don't force ourselves, but we have more aptitude if we were to.
Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's very situational. We're in institutions that make it very easy for us to make friends as children. Mm-hmm. Whereas as adults, we have to work. We're always told, don't get too close with your colleagues because, you know, that's a boundary problem or whatever, and it's risky or whatever. So yeah, being in school though, it's like a ready-made template. You're sitting in class, you have people next to you, you start talking to them. Like, look how we became friends. Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah. So I showed up early to my grade 10 science class because I wanted to pick my seat. And I know that wherever you sat the first day was where you were going to be sitting the whole semester, usually. So I chose the back corner and the whole place is empty. I'm there by myself. And the second person to walk in is Steve, who says nothing, doesn't even really regard me in any way, walks all the way around the classroom and sits directly beside me. Again, still saying nothing. So, I guess over the course of the semester, I just badgered you enough to get you to open up and talk to me.
Yeah, empty classroom. I remember from my perspective, I look, there's one person sitting on one of the science stools. I'm like, okay, how do I do this socially? There's nobody else in the room. There's one guy. Would it be rude if I didn't sit next to him. Like, going through my mind was like, what's the best thing to do in this type of social situation? And I thought to myself, it would be the least rude and most normal to just go sit next to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it worked out, but I was like, oh, this is awkward. Like, the comparison I made at your wedding when I gave the speech and talked about this was, it's like pissing on a bush in the woods. And then a guy comes over and chooses the exact same bush you're at. And it's like, why are you, what are you doing here? Why are you right beside me now?
The difference is you're not urinating.
Yeah, I know. It's a funnier comparison, obviously.
Like, you're sitting in a classroom. Wouldn't it be rude if I just sat on the other side awkwardly? And now we're just sitting there in silence.
That's actually what most people did at that time. And I guess if you wanted to be more socially adept, you would strike up conversation.
Right. I guess I missed that part. I just kind of sat there in silence next to you.
Yeah. Took out your notes and just sat in silence in this quiet room with just two of us. Back to that, I think some people naturally are good at striking a conversation and going out, but then I think our North American society kind of pushes us to go to work, come home, and you're just too drained and you don't want to do anything. And so you just kind of stay in. And there's also big emotional hurdles a lot of the time here. And I think a lot of socializing is just being able to get past those emotional hurdles. So in this case, it'd be you just got home from work, you're tired, which makes any emotional hurdles difficult to get over. And in that case, an example of an emotional hurdle would be the anxiety of having to leave your house, or like the pain in the ass is going to be to have to logistically get to the location where people are hanging out. And then the anxiety I was mentioning of like getting rejected if you talk to people and it doesn't go very well, and all these possibilities that loom in your head, you have to be able to push yourself past that to actually show up, because almost always these things are bigger in our heads than they are in real life. The joys and the fears, all these things generally are better in anticipation than they are in actual reality.
Ooh, that's so true.
Yeah. So I keep telling my friends, just show up and come with me, because I brought friends before, and right at the door, right as we're about to walk into this language exchange event, say, they can sometimes be, I can't do this, I have to leave now. And it's like, no, just stay for 30 minutes. Then that's success. You can go whenever, but you're already here. Just come in with me and talk to one or two people. And then she ended up having a great time. So a lot of the time we can back down, and every time we back down from a fear, it gets bigger. And every time we expose ourselves to it and survive unscathed, or even when the worst case scenario happens, often it's not even that bad. We teach our brains like this isn't as big of a problem as we think it is.
Right. Yeah. So a bit of social anxiety. You said lifestyle stuff.
Yeah. Lack of third places, which we have an episode on that.
That is huge. Okay. See the episode on third places. And this all makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. We're basically work home, rather than like having coffee shops and clubs, PTA meetings, I don't know, things that's not work or home.
And you mean like social clubs or sporting clubs or game clubs, not necessarily clubbing like bars?
Clubs, yes, not clubbing.
Yeah, to make a distinction there.
Though clubs, like clubbing, that is kind of a third space.
Kind of, but it's expensive a lot of the time. That's
it's prohibitive, yeah.
Yeah.
Pubs are more of a third place, like the Cheers pub, you know.
Again, alcohol is expensive these days.
That is prohibitive too, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're non-drinking, you don't go to those places, yeah.
Yeah.
So coffee shops are kind of the best example.
Probably, but the thing is, that would be true if we were in a culture where people actually struck up conversations with others around them.
Ah, yeah. You're considered weird if you do that, aren't you? Like,
depends on how socially adept you are at doing it. I found ways to do it, such as addressing the situation. Excuse me, I see you're doing something here, but I just wanted to say hi. Like, you could do that depending on who you're approaching or why. I find it's actually harder to make friends with men a lot of the time, because a lot of the time men are more likely to say, I've got enough friends, or they think I want something from them besides just friendship.
They probably think you're hitting on them. Like, if you walked up to a guy at a coffee shop and said, hey, excuse me, like, I know this is weird, but it's just,
I mean, no, yeah. I mean, that would be like if I found somebody attractive, I guess, and I didn't want to disrupt them too much. But
right.
And then you address, like, you would say, like, I only have a second. I don't want to take so much of your time, blah, 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 if you really want to be very considerate. For guys, I don't know. You'd have to basically strike up conversation about something random around you, I think.
I find, like, if you're in, like, a game, participating in games are really good for men because it gives them some kind of structure and goal.
Group activities, yeah.
Yeah, either sports or Dungeons and Dragons. Like, these types of game settings are really good for men to strike up conversations.
Yeah, I was reading on a feminism subreddit, or if it was just the women's subreddit, but they were actually asking, why is it that men can't just be friends with women? Which, that's not my experience personally, but I can understand theirs, because they were saying for men, they don't tend to speak about their insecurities or problems in life with their friends. They only talk about that with their lovers, basically, if they have one. Whereas women will speak about those things with their friends. So then when women speak about those things with men who don't speak about that with anyone but lovers, they take it as romantic interest. And then it kind of can collapse that friendship by making it awkward at times.
Interesting. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, those are the reasons why I think we have this issue. It seems to be just like we're too busy. It's too difficult to get around. It's too expensive. But there are ways around that. Like, I'm pretty strapped for cash these days, and I've been able to make a huge social circle since, I don't know, the past like 6 or 7 months since moving to Toronto.
Well, you're time rich. And I think that's a huge advantage in this endeavor, because being time rich, you can go to free types of things or low cost types of things. Whereas if you're not time rich, even the largest amount of money in the world won't solve that problem, because every waking minute is absorbed in like work or obligations.
I think you overestimate my time richness. I do have my evenings, yes, because I don't have children. I don't have those sort of obligations. But if I was in a relationship or I had a job, I would still have my evenings as I usually do, unless my spouse really hates going to do stuff, in which case I guess not. But I still have to do stuff all day, every day, to try to get ahead to get these things. Because being time rich, you're still limited in what you can do, as you are experiencing moving to entrepreneurship, right?
Right.
There's always more stuff you can be doing. There's always more stuff you should be doing. You shouldn't be sitting around. So while I could technically just go about all day, every day doing whatever, I'm just going to sink further into an abyss. So
yeah, a flaneur.
Yeah, that is something I do mention in here.
A man about town.
Yeah. All right. So section two, the first one was why we need to talk about this. Now it's meeting up and connecting with strangers. So as Hans Selye, apparently a psychologist, pulled this from Dale Carnegie's book.
I like the name.
As much as we thirst for approval, we dread condemnation. And that's a general through line of just socializing with people. So I've given people tips when they've expressed frustration with meeting people and connecting with people. And the feedback you just most commonly get is, I don't want to not be myself. I want to be myself. And you're always going to be some form yourself, as long as you're not completely faking stuff. But it's like learning a new form of joke. Is that changing who you are? Is that not being yourself? Because that's kind of how they seem to treat my advice. I'm not saying radically change who you are. I'm saying try this approach instead. Mm-hmm. And the metaphor I usually use to explain this is playing a piano. If you put somebody in front of a piano and they start just mashing the keys and just hitting it with their fingers and doing whatever, they're not going to make very good music, but it will be entirely theirs, I guess. Mm. But it's not really going to be anything you want to hear. And then if somebody were to walk up and say, hey, these are chords, here's sheet music, here's how you read it. Are you then making it so they're not themselves anymore? Are they less able to express themselves through the music? Or now with these tools they've picked up through these songs and chords and stuff, are they more able to express themselves?
Ah, they're more able to be themselves. Interesting.
Right. By being better at communication, by being better at learning these things, you are able to express yourself with more confidence and with more skill.
I love it. I think the same metaphor applies to fashion. By changing your clothes, you're not changing who you are, just a different version of yourself, like a formal version or a less formal version. But as you learn more about fashion and style, you get better at expressing yourself because you have all these creative ways you can express yourself rather than just a black t-shirt and jeans.
I think that's basically all creativity, honestly, like cooking as well.
Yeah,
because you learn the conventions to know what they are, and then you can use them and break them as you choose to express yourself. So to the emotional hurdle part, I think that's the first thing that needs to be addressed when approaching these things. To me, I mean, we've talked about this a couple times. Bravery is feeling the fear and doing it anyway.
Right.
Because a lot of people seem to think, oh, I'm scared. I can't do this. I'm anxious. So that means I shouldn't. I shouldn't do these things because of that.
Yes. Courage is only courage because there's fear there.
Yes.
Alan Carr talks about this. Alan Carr writes books about stopping alcohol and stopping smoking. And he talks about, like, people think alcohol gives them courage, right? They say it's liquid courage. But what it's really doing is removing fear.
So liquid foolishness.
Is it really courage if there's no fear there? Because for it to be courage, it has to be fear that is overcome. And when you remove the fear, there's nothing to overcome, and therefore there's no courage. So it doesn't actually give you courage.
No, it takes away the fear, which is, in my opinion, if you're in a situation where you should be scared or intimidated and you're not at all, then you might just be foolish. You might be an idiot.
Right. It just makes you foolish. It doesn't make you courageous. And that reframing around what alcohol is and does, that line stands out for a lot of people, but I think it applies to this definition of feel the fear and do it anyway.
And I think in most of these situations, the worst case scenario is that you just won't get on with people. I've met a lot of people. I've met probably over 1,000 people since moving here at this point. And in doing that, you end up some people are just not going to vibe with you. Sometimes you're going to go out and it's going to be an awkward night and you put yourself out there. That was success. That's all it required. You tried and then you just didn't hit it off with anyone. There's no point in taking it personally. It's not that you are deeply flawed or anything. Sometimes it's just practicing talking to people and it's just a bad group for you because I've had those nights still.
Right. I'm sure you've mentioned them. If your success depends on it working, then yes, you're setting yourself up for failure because that's an external metric of success. You're interpreting their reactions as, what does it mean about me as a person? What does it mean about me?
Yeah, getting your ego tied up in it.
It's something maybe about them and your lack of interest, shared interests, or that person is just off themselves because of something in their life and they're just being weird. So it's not about you necessarily.
But I think there's also a useful reframe there that it took me way too long to start really considering is, do you like them? It doesn't matter necessarily whether they like you if you don't even care about them at all. Because a lot of us are more worried about rejection than whether we actually want to be friends with this person.
That's a buyer-seller frame.
Yeah.
So the default is to go up as the seller. Like,
yeah, you're selling yourself.
Hey, everybody.
Like me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like you're selling yourself. You know, and we're told we're going to market ourselves. We're selling ourselves. We're always selling. Always be closing.
Internalized capitalism.
And the buyer dynamic is what you're saying is a reframe, being like, I'm here to purchase something. And so you're kind of the selector of, do I like them? Does this person match my interests and values?
I mean, it's a combination of both, of course. I don't like either of those economic terms applied to this. I think it's better to just walk up and say, hey, like, are we a match? Are we going to be good friends? Not necessarily like, yeah, it's both. Yeah, it's give and take.
Yeah, you don't want to be some standoffish, like, connoisseur. I don't know if I can take your number. Let me see.
Yeah, like you're just gonna be a snob about it.
Apply for it. I have
a joke about that. I mean, I have joked about that before, but like, obviously it's got to be cocky comedy.
It does have to be, but it would work if you did it the right way.
It would probably go over well, depending. I've had it blow up in my face a couple times that the person's really not feeling it. So.
Oh, tell me, you have to share.
No, it's not. There's not a good story or else I would have told it. They're just like, no.
Oh, okay.
What are you talking about? They refuse to play along. This would go hand in hand with awesomeness when we do that episode.
Ah, we have to do that episode.
A lot of that's relevant to this, but like, this is still, like I told you, a different animal.
It is.
So I've written articles before on how to make friends, and I make a distinction called narrow versus wide friendships. I used to call it deep, but that makes it seem like it's the preferred one.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but narrow friendships tend to be deeper, but only into one topic. They tend to be like a friend that you only talk about, say, I don't know, sports with, or even just specifically basketball. That person, though, you've categorized them as a sports person, a basketball person, and it's not like you're going to turn to them and start talking about your relationship problems or your troubles at work or your other hobbies, because you don't have that relationship. It's restricted to this one thing. And I would recommend, if you want to bond with people faster, you would
make them wider.
Yeah. You would cover broader topics, jump around to random things. If you have ADHD, you're probably already doing that, but
yes.
Maybe you have to reel it in a little bit.
Or with ADHD, you can actually hyper-focus too.
Yeah, true. That's one way. So like people can feel that they can talk to you about anything if you cover a broad array of topics. So then they feel they can talk to you about anything, especially if you do it non-judgmentally and open-minded and with curiosity about them. Mm-hmm. You actually take interest, you actually listen to what they say, and you try to use active listening, especially complex reflections, where you rephrase back their intent to them. Because in doing that, they feel understood and like you're actually listening to them instead of waiting for your turn to talk.
And checking their phone and looking around their room and,
yeah,
you know, generally being bored in the subject, you know, that kind of stuff.
Take an interest. The other thing I've read about is more, I don't know if it's actually been verified by any research or anything, but some people have suggested that going to different locations has a similar sort of effect. Like showing up together at places or just being in a variety of different locations kind of subtly clues them into like they're safe in this environment. So they will also feel they can bring you to a bunch more places.
That's huge in like the dating advice world. They call it venue changes, where you would be in various different environments with the person. So it's like club, restaurant, party,
beach, park.
Like beach. Yeah. You have a diversity of reference experiences that are broader, wider, rather than this is just the club guy, the club girl, whatever. It's like they become a person rather than just like this narrow.
Yeah. A whole person than a parody. Yeah. If you only see somebody at a sporting event, then you won't think to invite them to a gala, for example.
Right. I have the experience of this in like the whiskey realm. There's like some people where this is the only kind of topic generally that's broached.
You only talk about whiskey?
Yeah.
I mean, the most obvious questions for small talk when you meet people are often quite boring. What do you do? Avoid that.
Oh, I like that.
It's terrible. What do you mean?
I like talking about what I do.
It's not fun. It's just factual. You're going to interview mode and it's not actually connecting with people. That's a problem a lot of people do. It's really boring. It's really boring. It's stereotypically a thing that people complain about. Asking, what do you do? It's like you have no brain in your head. Ask anything else. Make a guess about what they are. If you're going to go to the topic, say you seem like a white collar worker, or you seem like you work with your hands, or something that is more interesting than just tell me the answer to this question. Oh, okay. I don't know anything about that. Like, you're an insurance adjuster. Great.
Oh, see, I hate when it's a gamble, because then you get like this topic that's not interesting. I love when I ask that question and they're like, I'm a psychologist. I'm like, bingo. We got like hit the jackpot on that one. And then it's like, we just geek out or something, you know?
You're hoping that you have something in common. But most of the people I've met here, I didn't know what they did for months because I just joked around and had fun with them and just engaged them as a person. Most people don't want to be pulled into their work mode or think about their...
I do.
Most people do not. Shut up. Oh my God. Like, some people are really all about it, but a lot of us don't care that much, or we would rather have fun. We're out to have fun and talk to people. We're not there to talk about work. We already talk about work and live work all day, every day. And most people don't want to return to that.
Yeah. People talk about work-life separation. My concept is work-life integration. How can I bring the two together so they're married?
No, I think that's a mistake even for you. I think we all need to have lives outside of our careers. But that's as a person who doesn't really have a very coherent career. But I mean, like, making guesses about somebody is more likely to bring up something. Like, I mean, avoid stereotypes if you can. Like, don't be like, oh, you're in an IT because of some of their characteristics. It would not be great. Instead, I would pick something else. I'll pick something stupid sometimes if I can't think of anything, like an acrobat or, I don't know, professional cheerleader. So I don't know why those are just two related things. But I have a ton of general tips. I don't think we're going to be able to get through all of them and still cover this. But remember their name. I think a lot of people are really bad at names and they use that as an excuse a lot. Oh, I'm bad with names. We're all bad with names. You have to put an effort in.
Yeah.
My dad had somebody slap him in the face one time by saying, it's not that you're bad with names, it's just that you don't care. And if you did care, you would put a little bit of effort in. When I meet a group of people, I will then be silently, when I'm not engaged in conversation, silently going through and like naming everybody in my head and then jumping around randomly to see if I can still remember it. So then it's really drilled in. And then I relate it using a mnemonic to like a fictional character or somebody I know in real life, or like it sounds like something, a characteristic or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's very true though. It's more of an attentional problem than a memory problem. People say, I have a terrible memory. I don't remember names. I don't think it's about memory. I think it's about attention. It's the same reason why I was never good at math. It's not that I wasn't good at math. It's that I didn't care about math. So I literally zoned out every class and never did the homework.
And also, like, why are we using this? I'm listening to How to Win Friends and Make...
Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yeah, I'm re-listening to that just as a preamble for this episode. And in that, he was, I don't remember, I lost it.
He says, a person's name is the sweetest word to their ear, music to their ears. Like, he says something like that.
Yeah, you give them the subtle compliment of remembering their name.
So why? Why is that important?
Because everyone loves their name.
When we hear like remembering names, like, oh, so what? Who cares? Like remembering names, but...
Everyone wants to feel important, right?
Right, yes. It's a deep psychological trigger for people because it helps them feel important, feel seen. And most people feel like the opposite of that in their daily life. They feel unimportant, unvalidated, unseen, unheard. And just saying someone's name, it's like, wait, this person cares, is listening and sees me or hears me. Or, like, there's something to that that's powerful.
I mean, the fact that you took the time to remember it, the fact that you remembered them at all. A lot of the tips I have in here are basically just making somebody feel that they were remembered and memorable.
Yeah.
That they weren't just some other blob of a person that you didn't give a shit about.
And that goes back like deep for people and to like their early childhood experiences maybe. And it's like a deep trigger where they didn't feel seen growing up, didn't feel heard, didn't feel validated. Their emotional needs were unmet. They just kind of kept to themselves because their family didn't understand them. They go through life kind of with this self-protection, like maybe it's vulnerable to connect with people. And then somebody remembers their name and it's like, wait a minute, you care, like you're listening.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time parents try to craft us into what they want us to be instead of discovering who we are. And so being yourself is often dangerous in those contexts because they will try to hammer it out of you. I remember similar things like being very imaginative and being like shaken and told, live in the real world, stop living in imagination.
Right. And we're basically taught that we have to sacrifice authenticity for belonging.
For acceptance. Yeah.
Yeah. That rule that we can't be ourselves, we have to put on a mask. is the very thing that's trying to protect us from rejection, but it's keeping us from actually connecting. And it's keeping us from actually being vulnerable and connecting with people. So we go out to make friends with a mask on, thinking we're trying to protect ourselves, but really we're now playing some role that doesn't feel good. It's not rewarding, and we're not really getting connection out of it. And it's this fear.
Largely, I think a lot of this is to do with fear. People will come up with excuses as to why they shouldn't take action and give away their agency. That's not me, or, oh, I just don't want to. But a lot of the time, you'll catch them in other moments where they'll complain about not getting the thing they want. And it's like, no, you do want this thing, but accepting that you are afraid or that you could do something about it then puts the responsibility in your hands. And if you're not happy, that's on you. But on the other hand, that gives you power to be able to fix these problems. You can then go out and fix it.
Right? Because the alternative would be, like, I don't care. I don't want it. I don't want it anyway. I'm good. You kind of go into that very rigid, very left brain. Nobody can hurt me. I don't care.
But it's like some of the most easily hurt people.
Oh, every time somebody says, like, you know what? I'm over. I'm really good now. This happened yesterday. Like, you wonder sometimes.
Like, I think a lot of the time they think that that's what strength is. But it's like, no, strength is actually acknowledging and working through your weaknesses instead of ignoring that they exist. But I'm just going to rapid fire some of these things. Some of them need a little elaboration, but most of them don't. So these are broad suggestions for when in a group. Question yourself as to whether you have to work on these things. I have come up with them because I've had to fix them all in myself, basically. And so as I've done these things, I've had much better results. And sometimes I backslide, sometimes I make mistakes, and I usually get a little emotional slap to myself often when I do. And so I've learned just don't do them. So for example...
So you're the pro for this concept, by the way.
I hesitate to do that, but I guess because I've basically made socializing my job for the past however many months, if not years, it's just a bunch of hard-learned lessons. I think when I tell people that I used to have social anxiety, that like standing in a food court would just make me super uncomfortable. Just being in public used to make me uncomfortable, being seen at all. And I'm 6'7", so it's difficult to not be seen. And when I tell people that now, they don't believe me. I mean, they don't outright tell me I'm lying, but they do say that they can't see that at all. And so I think you can overcome these things.
They don't see what I see.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could tell them the stuff if I wanted to, but like, why weigh people down?
I mean, before we even met, like we met in grade 10, I remember in grade 9, I'd see you walk around the halls. Uh-huh. And all I remember is the concept of you I had was the guy who walks behind his friends and is kind of hunched over. It always felt like you were trying to hide or...
Yeah, I didn't want to be observed.
Right. I just remember that standing out as, that looks a little unique.
Yeah.
It's just being 6'7". And not trying to be seen is a hard thing to do.
Yeah, there's various forms of this, but most people will then like slouch their shoulders forward, hunch down, and try not to be very big. Body language is something I have also dabbled in studying, whatever merit there is to that. There's some, but so anyway, the things I was mentioning was like avoid complaining, avoid judging, bring the energy you want to attract, be as upbeat as you can be, avoid gossiping, aim for banter, and avoid logic. That's why I was saying...
Ooh. That's good.
Don't talk about your job because it's going to be kind of boring and stagnant and like just in the mire of logic. The good conversationalists are ones that are fun and witty and make it light and joking all the time. And you'll find that even if you do that, some people will try to pull you back to logic and factual questions when there's any lull at all, because that's all they've got to go for.
Oh, keeping it an emotional level. Yep.
Yeah. You want to simulate emotions, not logic. You want to have fun. Fun is not logical most of the time. Be positive. Look for humor wherever possible. This one, I think if you're more nerdy or logic based, you will have a difficult time on this one. Try not to backtrack on topics. Unless there was something very important you had to say, if the conversation flows onward, don't stop the flow and go back to try to finish something. Continue on with the flow.
Okay, it's like improv. So it would be like an example where maybe in earlier podcast episodes, if you go back, you'll see Phil tend to be more improvisational and me tend to be more rigid. And he would go off on a tangent somewhere in this direction. And I'd say, all right, so what we were talking about before, and I would try to kind of bring us back on some track, but it's interruptive. It's really like a killjoy.
It also seems like you're kind of like smacking me, being like, you've got us off course. But I mean, that is a flaw. That's also part of why our dynamic works, because you're good at bringing it back to the focus.
But I've been a lot smoother now.
I think we both are, yeah.
Yeah, rather than just like, we're in a dead end right now. Let's go back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like we have tons of stuff we can pull at. I think the other ones are like this one, this episode, I'm a little concerned about this problem because this is a problem we had at the beginning where we had a lot of information to cover and I ended up just shoveling it on you and not having any discussion. Yeah, you whined about it enough.
Go to the episode on design thinking.
Oh, it's so fascinating. But I did a bad job with it.
It's a fascinating topic where I'm just being lectured and then I became so bored about it. I'm like,
But also at that point, you felt like I had to entertain you and not that you and I are both entertaining entertaining them, you guys, listeners.
Right. The original concept of the podcast was Phil thinks of a concept and I show up and I don't know what we're talking about.
I mean, that's going to be the case a lot of the time anyway, when I pick a random thing. But yeah, you have to show some interest. When telling stories, I think don't get bogged down in minute details. Good enough is good enough. Just think of the main points. You can just strip away everything else. Avoid arguments and heavy topics if you can. If it's going to spark a debate, depends on the audience you're with and what kind of people you want. But it's not, if it's in a group setting and you're just meeting new people, depending on what you're meeting about, it's probably best to keep it light. Just see if you actually like the person and trust them enough to be vulnerable with them. And then you can start having these conversations.
Yeah.
Though I guess you can also still look for like red flags. If somebody to me starts unironically using the word woke and criticizing it, then I'm going to be like, all right, back away. I don't think we're going to get along very well.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they're going to be more likely to be quite conservative probably then. Avoid why questions.
Oh, I do this all the time in counseling.
Uh-huh. Explain.
Why do you use drugs? Like, it sounds super judgmental.
Sorry, that's neutrally. Why do you use drugs? It still sounds like you're challenging the choice. I mean, obviously with that question, you are challenging that choice because of the loadedness of it. But
the better way to do it is, in general, don't use the why.
Yeah. Like, for what made you want to do that instead of why did you do that?
I was going to say, change the why to a what.
Yeah. Or what were you trying to get with that? Or something like that. Like, it's still a bit better than asking why, because why puts them on the defensive. Like, why did you do that?
Right. I ask it as, what does this substance do for you? And I ask in a very unsarcastic way. Like, when people in their life, like, what does it even do for you? I'm more like, what is it doing for you? But it's a very serious way. Sometimes I even have to explain, I'm not asking this in a sarcastic way. What is it actually giving you? To be very curious about it. But yeah, so don't ask why questions, because it sounds judgmental. Yeah.
If you're going to give somebody feedback, or if they're complaining to you about something and venting and you want to give a suggestion, ask permission first. Can I give you a suggestion? Would you like to hear my thoughts? Something like that, because then they'll actually receive it, as opposed to just being like, here's what you should do. Like, I know better than you. People hate that. I get really annoyed when receiving it myself. So,
right. Unsolicited advice. There's nothing more depressing than good advice.
Yeah. And in general, when in social contexts like that, especially when people don't know very many people or it's mostly strangers showing up, if you see somebody looking lost and looking for a group to join and you're already part of one, wave them over. Because imagine you're in that context. What would you have liked if somebody were to welcome you over and just usher you into a group? It's a lot easier to step in than to just have to wedge your way in by yourself without anybody welcoming you.
Right.
I tend to do that quite often, because it's just, first, they will probably be more likely to be your friend, and also it just makes the party bigger a lot of the time.
So don't just sit there feeling superior because you have friends and that person's alone.
Yeah, sure. So moving on to massive action. I think in this area, because I've been basically saying yes, I've been doing like the yes man approach to things. If people invite me, I will go a lot of the time, unless I absolutely know I hate that thing. Like, if I'm anxious about it or nervous or I've never done it before, I'm more likely to say yes, even though I know I'm going to be uncomfortable. It doesn't matter. If I have the energy and time, I will go. And the more you say yes, the more people will invite you. The more you show up, the more people you'll meet. And the more people you meet, the wider the range of people you'll interact with and the more skills you pick up from them. You'll pick up small jokes or like social graces that you haven't seen people do before, ways of transitioning out of a conversation or into a conversation. Just the more you do it, the more skills you'll acquire and the more it'll snowball. And in doing that, again, you'll get more invitations, you'll meet more cool people, you'll get more skills, and you'll just end up having this huge group of people that want you to be around.
But I don't need friends.
Everyone needs community. I think a lot of the time we like to convince ourselves that we don't. Like that thing we talked about where I think it was like 39% of people who move up the social ladder up to like higher income bracket end up dropping their friends in a lower bracket because they want just to have like a luxury life and they don't want to have to worry about whether their friends can afford it. To me, that's extremely selfish and isolating and exactly what's wrong with the system we're in. It's been shown that the more money you make, the more space you have per person, the lonelier they tend to be, because the square footage of your house gets bigger, but there's fewer people living in it.
Square footage of your house gets bigger. The square footage of your house shrinks.
Your heart?
Heart.
Oh, you almost got it. Yeah.
The square footage of your heart shrinks.
Yeah, I would say it shouldn't need to be said, these ones, but just to reiterate, be kind to everyone, not just those you find useful or attractive. Specifically men, don't be a dick to women you don't find attractive. Why are you doing that? Or like, to be friendly to other men. Talk to everybody. Be friendly to everybody.
Right, everybody, yeah.
Try to include everyone, especially the more timid people. Maybe not like pull them out in front of the group, because that might make them uncomfortable.
hey, everyone, look at this timid person.
Yeah, and especially never point out that they're shy or quiet. Don't say, hey, you're quiet. They've heard it so many times. It's not,
why so shy?
You go, you know we're gonna bite. You know we're not gonna bite. But like, you can excuse yourself from the broader conversation and go over and speak to them individually. I've made really good friends who are outgoing that has found the topic or the way it was being discussed off-putting or boring, and so they just ended up shutting up and falling asleep. So I've made friends by specifically going over and talking to them.
The person who's asleep at the party.
Sometimes. As well, if somebody continues to try to say something and gets talked over, maybe make space for them. Address them. Sorry, you were saying, and then like bring them out to talk. They were trying. And if they're not assertive enough or someone like me talks over them by accident, then it's better to bring it out of them to let them have a turn.
Yes. You've been holding better space for me in these recent episodes.
I mean, it's come with all the aggressive socializing, basically.
Yeah. You're walking the walk and talking the talk and walking the talk and talking the walk.
Yeah, whatever all of those mean. I guess also important thing at the end of this is like meeting people. Those are all tips for like getting along with people.
Right.
But be sure to ask for their information because a lot of the times you'll go to these events and a bunch of people, they might exchange information or maybe they'll forget, but just be the one to say, hey, do you have Instagram? That's an easy question. A lot of people these days are using Instagram, but like whatever platform you choose, you say, hey, do you have Instagram? You didn't ask for their information. You asked if they have it and they'll probably say, yes, which then infers that you can do it. But it's an easier question to ask.
Instead of like, can I have your number? Can I have your number?
Or give me your number. I guess that can work, but I mean, it's a little more assertive and can be seen as aggressive.
Yeah.
It depends. Hey, add me to WhatsApp. That's the same thing, the same statement, basically. And still a statement / command.
Hey, give me your number.
It can work, I guess. But yeah, it's not great in a friend context.
So aggressive.
Maybe actually in a friend context. I don't know. You have to gauge who you're talking to.
You just shout across the room and point at them like, hey.
So the third section is reaffirming the friendships. I would say reach out within a few days, ideally setting up a meeting in the following week. Group contacts, especially small groups, can be easier for people to say yes to because there's less pressure on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford things, you can do things like hikes, drinks in the park, coffee, board games, group cooking events. There's a lot of things, especially when the weather is nice. You don't even have to have a central thing. You can just say, we're going to go to the park with a couple of drinks or whatever, and people will often still show up. I think it can feel stupid reaching out to friends because like if they say like they're not interested, you'll feel like a loser, basically. But most of the time, they'll either just not respond or like they will probably say yes, I find.
Remember that definition of loser we came up with in episode 2?
I don't. I think it was like somebody who doesn't make any efforts to change a situation, just complains about it and gives up on trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then that's section 3. I just really breezed past it because we're over time. Section 4, I would say, is stick by your word. Follow through. If somebody invites you to something and it's like a week away and you've said yes on the day of, this is something that Canadians especially, but I imagine maybe all of North America, is bad at. When you're tired and the day actually comes and you don't really want to go, you'll often make excuses and just not do it. Go anyway. Hold yourself to it. Hold yourself to your word. You said you would go and this person's hosting an event. And if you were hosting events and like half the people said they would go and then didn't, you're going to feel like shit because you're like, why the hell did all these people say they would come? I got all this stuff prepared and nobody showed up. They will feel terrible and you probably won't get invited again. But also, if it's the first invitation that somebody's extended to you and you say no, the chances of a second invitation is dramatically lower. And a third after that for saying no is probably not going to happen. So if you do want friends and somebody actually reaches out to you, make as much of an effort as you can to show up that first time.
Yeah. If you say no to the first one, it's like chances of you getting more invitations is significantly lower.
I'm meeting so many people that if somebody shows up the first or second time, then I will probably keep inviting them. But after that, I probably forget about them because they aren't talking to me. They haven't come to anything. I met them that one time. So I might extend something to them if I'm going through my contact list to see like who I will invite to a bigger party, but weekly things, no more, because I don't have time to message everybody individually like that.
You're like a super connector.
Yeah, I suppose. I would say if you want to be gracious for events, if you can't go, don't be one of those people that's fence sitting. Don't be one of those people say maybe or ask me later.
Oh, or say they're going and then ghost.
Either one. All of those things are annoying and you won't be invited again, probably. Rightly so, I would say, because it's really annoying. Instead, I think it's best to do, this is actually from Tim Ferriss. He says, I'm going to say that I can't make it, but I'll let you know if that changes.
Yeah. Ghosting, people do that out of fear. They are afraid to say no to the invitation initially, so they say yes without intending to go because they can't say no and it's like too hard to say no.
Yeah, and if you're in the inviter and a person says no to you, don't harass them. Don't keep cajoling them.
No, yeah. Because then that makes them like people pleasing and they're like, they'll start saying yes and not show up.
Or they just won't respond, or they won't tell you, they'll just ghost altogether. Like they'll say yes and they'll ghost. I would say also, if you can, when you show up, bring a good attitude, of course, that's the one thing that's free. But if you can bring a gift, like a housewarming thing, I mean, a lot of people don't think that. They go like what you were doing with this, saying, entertain me. I'm coming to this event. What am I getting out of it?
I'm coming to this podcast. What are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, exactly. That's like a me. Like, no, if you want friends and you want to be invited to places, bring a good attitude, because you can always do that. Bring whatever help you can. Offer whatever help for cleaning up, if you can afford it. Yeah. If you can't do that, you can have a good mood. You can help them pick up. You can bring more people, I suppose, if that's what they're looking for. But at the very least, express gratitude afterwards. Either you're a ghost, either you're a guest or a host, a ghost.
Either you're a ghost.
Either you're a guest or a host. I combine the words. You should reach out to the host or the guests and thank them for coming and appreciate that they were there. It's just reaffirming that you like the person, that you want them around. And then finally, the last section was reevaluation. I think this is important, especially with the way I'm approaching it. I come to a new city. I've met hundreds of people and I have hit it off with a bunch, but some are not people I want around. I had to start to think about whether these people are people that I want to become more like, whether I think I like how I'll come off by just being associated with this person. Like if they're kind of a crass asshole, I don't really want to pick up those behaviors and I don't want to be associated with those behaviors. So I will not want those people around. I will prune them out. If somebody makes a mistake, I think it's worthwhile to like bring them aside and say, hey, maybe don't do this. I didn't appreciate that you did that. Or like some people said they were uncomfortable by that. And if they accept responsibility and they apologize and they're like, okay, I will do better, fine, give them another chance. If they continue doing it and like without regard, cut them out. If they get angry and they blame everybody else and say it's not their fault, cut them out. They're not going to change.
Yeah, you become like the 10 people you most associate with. You often hear that.
Yeah, I think it's in 5 years, you'll be a combination of the books you've read and the people you surround yourself with. That's the quote I have here.
Love it.
There are people though that will like step over the line too far. Like most of my friend group is actually women, because I am fine with if we dated or whatever and it didn't work out, then I will switch us to being friends. And I've had a hard time finding like decent single guys to want to come out. I mean, taking guys in relationships, no problem. But single guys to bring and like introduce them to my friends, it's been a challenge, because sometimes you'll get psychopaths or guys that are just there to pick up. And it's like, guy, you're in my friend group. What are you doing? Have a little more tact, or at least don't just step on everybody's toes when you show up.
Letting the fox into the hen house.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that. And so you're just like, okay, if I can't trust you around my female friends, then I can't have you around. We're not going to be friends. So, but similarly, I think you need to take responsibility for your own screw ups. We all screw up. And like I said earlier, it's better to acknowledge that than to deny it. So to try to fix your weaknesses and use that as a strength to get better, to be a better person. I mean, we're all flawed in our own ways, but it's not irrevocably flawed. It's not unfixably flawed. It's just a minor thing you might've said, an off joke or whatever. And then you just learn from it and move on. Apologize, own up to it. If people are going to condemn you over a slip up like that, then maybe it's not going to work either way, because like nobody's perfect. Everyone's going to make mistakes. Overall, I'd say most of this is exposure therapy.
Oh, that's so good. Exposure therapy being how do you get over a phobia? If that's the question, then the answer would be slow incremental exposure. Not the type of exposure that overwhelms. Like if you're afraid of spiders, it's not like, here's a tarantula.
Like right on you, yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't just like thrust someone into like a social situation that's too much. So you would go incrementally. You would look at, okay, can you connect with somebody you already know who you haven't talked to in a while? I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Or going to a group party that like you know everybody except for maybe a couple people, or going to an event with a buddy. Don't, like the extreme would be, like I met a girl at this singles event the other day where she had never had a boyfriend. She wasn't drinking. She wasn't wearing her glasses. She was there by herself and she didn't know anybody at all.
0 to 100.
Yeah, I'm like, what are you doing here? Like, oh my God. Like, I don't know how she could possibly have a good time in that context, but she stuck it up for a while.
You're like an advanced person and it's like a difficult context.
Yeah, I was there by myself too. And I only had one drink. And I find that that's like a high risk situation in terms of like having a bad time. Like I'm probably not, I might have a great time, but most of the time it's going to be a bit more draining by doing that by myself.
Yes.
But like, I think sometimes it's fine if you see it as sometimes just going out and socializing is just practice. It's a skill.
Just practice.
You're going out and talking to people. Sometimes you're not going to hit it off. So it's just, again, you're exposing yourself to a situation. Your subconscious sees you're not going to die. As I say, your brain needs proof, not promises. You can say to yourself unlimited times, it'll be fine. It's not a big deal. But until you've lived through it enough times, you will still be afraid of it.
Yeah, positive affirmations don't work in that way, that if you just say it enough, it doesn't convince you. You have to actually experience that you're safe. And so starting with low stakes, easy party where you know people, and then maybe like a structured environment, like a hobby. Maybe you go to a gym class or some kind of like a knitting club or reading group or something. And then you kind of slowly work up to, if you want to, I guess what you're doing, meaning you'll go it on like a Saturday night by yourself to an environment you have no idea of what's going on or who's there, and just approaching people. Like that's like level 10 of difficulty.
Yeah, I find I can only do that for a few hours. Like I'm pretty drained after like 2 or 3 hours of doing that. And then I'm just like, all right, it's only like 11:30, but I'm out. Like I can't, I'm done here. I'm still like, I have fun and I've talked to a bunch of people, but unless you've really hit it off with a couple people, you're going to be like, okay, nah, I'm good. So at this point, basically, if you've followed a lot of those things, you'll probably have a reputation as somebody that has stuff going on, who makes stuff happen, especially if you're hosting events. You'll probably have the option of a lot of people to hang out with and events you can organize and outings. People will reach out to you, ask you what's happening. And if you don't have anything going on, you can then use that as a springboard to make something happen. So like people will frequently ask me now, like, what's going on Saturday? And I haven't heard nothing. So it's like, I don't know. What do you want to do? And so then we can start spitballing, and then I'll just start inviting a bunch of people, and it'll turn to be like 10 to 20 people will end up showing up. So I would say I have a recap, and I have a couple of recommended readings because I know I'm conscious of your time, Steve. So recommended readings, I would say How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Mm-hmm. It's more about winning friends. It's an old book. So the influence part is not like today where they're going to be like, manipulate, get in there, take what you want.
It's not about being manipulative, though a lot of people can use it that way. It's just general principles for being a good person. It's really like the modern gentleman ethic of just being considerate of other people, really.
Yeah, one of the quotes that pretty much kind of summarizes that book is from Alfred Adler, another psychologist. It is the individual who is not interested in his fellow man who has the greatest difficulty in life and provides the greatest injury to others. It is among such individuals that all humanity failure springs.
Love it. So good.
Yeah. So then the other books are The Go-Giver, you are familiar with, by Bob Berg and John Mann. That's about don't go and give, don't be go-getter. Like don't go to people just to use them.
It's to take. Yeah, Go-Giver is to connect and give, yeah.
Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi. That's just an amazing book on how to network without being slimy. And then the final one that might be surprising to Steve is The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John C. Maxwell. Hmm. He's a guy that was in the church and he learned leadership skills through that. But it is a lot of just like how to navigate social situations, how to not step on people's toes, how to step up. Because the more charismatic and the more sociable you end up being, the more you're going to likely be forced or pushed into leadership roles. So it's important to think about these things. So recap, say yes to things, especially those you haven't tried. Run towards your fear.
Watch the movie Yes Man for that
yes,
one.
Yeah. Take interest in others and be positive. Get people's contact information. Mm-hmm. Reach out within a few days of meeting them, if not the next day. Extend an invitation within the following week or two. Accept invitations, especially the first. Express gratitude afterwards to hosts and attendees, and add to the party. Don't expect to be entertained. Those are the main takeaways, I would say.
Walk into the house, kick your feet up, entertain me.
I mean, some people do treat it like that. Like I had a party where it was like a $5 buy-in just to like pay for the venue. It was a 50 person capacity. And they're like, what do we get from this? I'm like, you get to come to a party with awesome people. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, if it's $5 in this economy, you're getting shit. Like, what are you talking about? It's usually $25 or $30. But here's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut. Vonnegut? I don't know how to say his name.
You are the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, this is a quote that I think that you yourself also would very much like. When Vonnegut was telling his wife he's going out to buy an envelope, oh, she says, well, you're not a poor man. You know, why don't you go online and buy 100 envelopes and put them in the closet? And so I pretend not to hear her and go to get an envelope because I'm going to have a hell of a good time in the process of buying one envelope. I meet a lot of people and see some great looking babes. I thought it was babies when I first heard that. And see some great looking babes, and a fire engine goes by and I give them the thumbs up and ask a woman what kind of dog that is. And I don't know, the moral of the story is we're here on earth to fart around. And of course the computers will do us out of that. And what the computer people don't realize, or they don't care, is we're dancing animals. You know, we love to move around and we're not supposed to dance at all anymore.
That's good. I like the spirit of play.
Yeah.
That's embodied there.
This is why I like the Memento Mori episode we did. That was way back when. I'll reference that as well. But
it's a very good
one. I keep saying to people, like, we're going to die. What does it matter whether you retain your ego or not? Go and have as much fun as possible. Have a good community. Be supportive. Don't be selfish. And things will work out better for you and everyone around you.
The end.
Yeah.
Love it.
So that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. Please like and subscribe. Leave us a review on whatever you're listening on. I guess it doesn't seem to matter whatever podcatcher you use, but we very much would appreciate it. Right, Steve?
We do. That is correct.
Good. I'm glad I wasn't lying to you. All right. See you later. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
As audacious as I can possibly be.